All right, ladies and gentlemen, good morning. We'll get started. And welcome to Hudson Institute, and welcome to those who are watching us live streamed. We had Vice President Pence here, who gave an address on U.S.-China policy yesterday. And he had a teleprompter. So I feel very... very deprived not having a teleprompter, but I'll do my best here. First of all, I would like to thank Nate Sibley, who is back there, who is the program manager of the Kleptocracy Initiative. I'm the executive director of the Kleptocracy Initiative, so we have a lot of titles for an operation of 2.5 people. I should say the other half of, the third element of the Kleptocracy Initiative is one half of Ben Judah, who is in London right now, so I'm afraid he's not here. And we'd like to thank Josh Kirschenbaum, who's going to be part of the program, who really instigated this, and he and Nate have put this together. And we have a very interesting program today that's very specific, highly relevant to what is going on in our neck of the woods, topically speaking. So we will hear, as you can see from the program, we do have it all here. We'll hear from Ilze Znotina first, who's going to give a fairly major speech. Then we'll have remarks from Nicolas Véran and Josh Kirschenbaum. Then we'll sit down for a panel discussion, and the ambassador, Andriy Tekmanis, I apologize for mispronouncing all of this, but the ambassador will kick off the panel with a few remarks. We'll have a discussion, and then we'll have some time for questions and short comments from you all. Ilze Znotina, then, is head of Latvia's Financial Intelligence Unit, so I imagine she's been quite busy lately, and she's had a very distinguished career doing difficult things, especially now, but all along, it looks like. She was a partner at Deloitte, specializing in dispute resolution with expertise in regulatory issues, insolvency, anti-bribery, anti-money laundering, fraud, and white-collar crime. She performed anti-fraud reviews at many international and local businesses, leading investigation of corruption, false accounting, fraud, theft, asset recovery, tax evasion, money laundering, and obstruction of justice. All stuff I love. This is terrific. Prior to being appointed, she led the preparation of Latvia's national AML-CFT risk assessment and several sectoral assessments. She submitted a doctoral thesis at the Faculty of Law at University of Latvia, master's in international and European law from Riga Graduate School of Law, and bachelor's in law from the University of Latvia. So she is highly Latvian educated, it seems. No US or UK or anything in there. That's very refreshing, actually, for someone who speaks English so perfectly, too. Then, Ambassador Tekmanis has been the ambassador to the United States since 2016. He was the ambassador to the Council of Europe, Russia, Germany, and the United Kingdom. Well, for our subject today, those are the perfect countries. Perfect. And he was Undersecretary of Minister of Foreign Affairs and also Mayor of Riga in the early 90s. I've never been to Riga, but I hope to visit someday. We have then a Frenchman with us, Nicolas Véran, whom I've heard of for years, but we've never met before. He's a senior fellow at Bruegel and is currently visiting our swamp, resident at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. And he researches financial systems and financial reform around the world. we'd like to get to know you better, Mikra, I'm sure, including global financial regulatory initiatives and current developments in the European Union, which is very much our broader topic today. He's testified repeatedly at the European Parliament, national parliaments in several EU member states, and the US Congress. And I could say Nicolas is an up-and-comer in the European think tank world and policy world, and may not be that well known here in Washington, but he's very well known in Europe, for whatever it's worth, and in France in particular. Then we have Josh Kirschenbaum, who is with us, who's really the to a great extent responsible for this event. And we have the pleasure of working with Josh on a fairly regular basis now. And Josh actually knows real things, unlike me. I've never been in government. Josh has been at FinCEN of the Treasury Department and really knows the nuts and bolts of all of this stuff. And we're, apart from this event, we're working with Josh on various things. And very happy to know him. I think that's it. And I'm Charles Davidson, as I said, the executive director of the Kleptocracy Initiative. We have huge piles of our reports on the table out there. I think many of you are familiar with our work. If you go to the Hudson website, you'll see a cogent summary of what we do with links to our major reports, et cetera. And we are going to try to consolidate all of our reports and update our infinite wisdom into one report, which we should have by the holidays. So thank you all for coming, and please.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm very, very honored that I have been invited to speak here at Hudson's Institute. I think that it's kind of like a cherry on top of the cake for my visit, which I had here for the last couple of days, meeting the friends and the stakeholders of US authorities. So I hope that I will be able to describe a bit more about that particular subject matter. And I know that it is of big interest right now, not only in Latvia, but also here in the United States. Of course, even if it somehow might seem challenging to come here and to speak up about the Latvian issues, I think that Latvian government has never been trying to bury in the sand its head, because it is very important that you know where are the problems and how we are trying to tackle those problems. And it is my belief that the small countries can also play a big role. And therefore, I'm here. And I was asked to present a bit about our issues, which we have there. And this picture nicely reminds me about the home where I haven't been for 3 weeks because I came here from Sydney, which where we had an Egmont group meeting. And right now it's time to go back and to work there on those issues. So for those who haven't been informed what happened and why I have been invited here to speak, most probably some of you have noticed that there was FinCEN's announcement 311 this February, which related to the same bank which we have here in the picture. So ABLV was announced as being a major money laundering concern. And after this announcement, several events and the consequences were of this announcement. So right now we have not only FinCEN's 311 announcement, but also what we had this year. We had a very important event, which is Moneyval assessment. Moneyval is a regional FITF body which assesses the country's AML-CFT regime and its effectiveness. And although we were quite satisfied with the technical assessment, of course, the ratings on IOs or the effectiveness were not so satisfactory. So The government of Latvia, immediately after FinCEN's announcement, took certain very focused measures to really to tackle those issues which were indicated by the FinCEN's announcement. And I must say that it was not just like FinCEN announced something and then Latvian government realized that there should be some activities. We were trying to really to improve our AML-CFT system already for several years. And being a part of private sector, but also having very close relationship with the public sector, I noticed that unfortunately, if you sometimes allow something like this happen, if you establish the system which is too weak or intransparent, then it may take a long journey to recover after this. And this was our case. So despite of the fact that we already had very many measures taken in order to combat money laundering and to improve the weaknesses of our system, FinCEN's announcement was also the reason why I came to the public sector. So thanks to the US Treasury and its agencies, because it was of course decided by the government that and there was many questions by the government. What happened? What went wrong? Where did we fail to notice something? And one of the questions was really like important one was, what is the role of the FIU? Does it has a central role, or is it some kind of like additional or somewhere there? So I'm coming back to the Moneyval assessment, because it allowed us really to concentrate and to focus and to prioritize what we need to do. And I will just briefly describe for those who doesn't know what happened in this Moneyval. So we had 11 IOs which have been rated, and those IOs are describing how effective is our system. And unfortunately enough, we received two low ratings for those IOs. And these were in relation to the legal persons and ability to discover, to establish ultimate beneficial owner, which was to my big surprise, I must admit. And we also got, I think it in the whole history, this is the lowest rating, unfortunately, we got a low for IO 11, which is financial sanctions for proliferation. And you know that it is something which is at stake for the US government, and it is right now also something which is at stake for us in Latvia, and I hope that it will be at stake for the European Union and their members. So Latvian government took an actions, and right now, after months and something, we adopted on 25th of September, we adopted an action plan for how to implement those recommendations which were drawn by the Moneyval. And this action plan is really a comprehensive one. And what can I say? It is that during that really not an easy time what we had right now for last 9 months already, we have got a common understanding of public and private sector players, that only by working together, only by focusing and prioritizing, we can achieve success. We can show the substantial progress of the system. So according to action plan, we have defined several priorities which we have right now as a government and as FIU or the supervisor for financial and also for non-financial entities. So first of all, we will be achieving to strengthen risk-based supervision. This is easy to say, it is not easy to achieve. It requires not only to understand its risks, what we have there, do we have something which is there, or we don't? Maybe we have something new which we haven't noticed yet. We will have to introduce much more dissuasive preventive measures and sanctions. We were always blamed for not being dissuasive with sanctions. And it is true, it is objective. We need to be more focused on sanctioning those who are violating the law. This also means this supervision, risk-based supervision, this also means that we will have to be very careful with liquidation of the same bank. As you know, the bank, as I said, during the quite complicated process, went to the voluntary liquidation. One may ask, why voluntary liquidation when there are some issues with potential of money laundering? When the FinCEN's announcement was very clear on saying that ABLV was involved in money laundering, the answer to this is not an easy one, and we are not trying to hide ourselves that we went through, and me, myself, I was very much involved when I was appointed to the position in June 2018, this year. I was very much involved in discussions about how to really deal with this issue. Because as you know, ABLV Bank was supervised by European Central Bank. This is something which makes us in a very difficult position, because European Central Bank, until this particular event, and we also did not realize that AML will not be into their scope. We were informed that this will be just a prudential supervision, not an AML supervision. So right now we are in the very middle of discussions. How far should European supervision reach national banks? This is very important subject matter, and I think that it is very important that we understand that between all those scandals which we read on daily basis, only some of the banks can be described as the turning point. And this is one of the banks which really made a turning point for different and obviously based opinions on how AML-CFT regime of European Union and global AML-CFT regime will be developing. So right now, when we had a discussion on how to liquidate that bank, what to do with this bank, we realized that there's no legal basis for asking European Central Bank to go into the AML matters. So we came to the conclusion, based on our national legal framework, that we can satisfy the request made by the shareholders to have a voluntary liquidation, but it will be strictly controlled liquidation. And I myself and FIU as a body, which on regular basis receives just STRs or SARs or some unusual transaction reports. In this particular process, we will be much more involved with controlling the process. This is my duty, my goal, my ambition, not to allow this particular process to flow out of the hands. So we will be controlling this, and right now, you may ask why this takes so long compared to other situations, reasonably similar situations from the point of view that there were already Pilatus Bank or in Cyprus or in Andorra or in Swiss or in Netherlands or in Denmark or in Estonia. Why we are taking so long to understand how to deal with this? And the reason is, I may explain that the reason is that we are not under the time pressure, and therefore we have to put together the process where we can certainly see this control element. We cannot allow ourselves to rush. We are not doing any payouts for this reason, We have to put a clear mechanism for how not to allow that money which was in that bank and might be not a clean money flow out to the other economies. So, as I said, risk-based supervision will be one of our key priorities. The other one is that we certainly need to facilitate more efficient exchange of information on horizontal as well as vertical level. We need to establish, and we already had amended our law, which allows us to develop public-private partnership. I must say that it is already working. During this, our national risk assessment, we already started to cooperate a lot with the private sector. I myself was at that time a private sector representative, so I was kind of like asking myself all the time, what's there? What are the obstacles for efficient cooperation? Because this is the only way how we can solve those problems, those emerging problems which we have right now, as to cooperation between ourselves, as partnering between ourselves. And the same with the public sector entities. Why we are not meeting each other, having a conversation with each other. So sharing information, this is something which, of course, for many FIUs, as I'm a representative of FIU right now, is the true kind of mindset change, not to be somewhere in the shadow, not to hide ourselves, but to share information and to be a friend for those who are reporting information to us and for those whom we can disseminate that information. Then, of course, one of the biggest issues in every country, I would suppose, maybe not in this one, because yesterday I met with FBI and I was very happy to receive very many nice words and also support and suggestions how we can improve our law enforcement. Because law enforcement, of course, was an issue, and that was part of the problem why we allowed our system to be so weak some years ago. You cannot allow you to have a large, huge, I would say, financial sector if you do not contribute a funding for the law enforcement. This is the biggest, issue or the problem for the governments to understand. And this is my duty right now to support those law enforcement and prosecutor agencies and to request from the government appropriate funding in order to balance that financial sector's ability to accumulate money and also risks and to fight with those risks. And then we have those particular measures which relates to the improving our system for targeted financial sanctions. And I think that we have already right now been improving it a lot. And this is not an easy task to understand how to really show the substantial progress on such a new trend, I would say, as sanctions for proliferation. But considering that we will be organizing an event next year on IO 11, I think that I will be able to invite all of you, and we will be able to share share our knowledge, expertise, and understanding of how to improve that particular part of fight with the money laundering, terrorism financing, and proliferation. So coming back to the plan, I would say that we have set a clear deadlines and very demanding deadlines. Unfortunately, we have just a year to show our progress. And in parallel with deadlines, we have also set very clear KPIs for how to achieve and evaluate our activities, whether we are achieving something. If we come back to this particular bank, my personal view is that nothing will be so important as the control over the ABLV liquidation. From that liquidation, we can basically understand everything that is needed from FITF perspective. From liquidation process of the bank, we can understand our national and regional risks. We can improve our international cooperation, although on that matter we had received a very, very high rating. We can show that there is a supervision. We can show that there are preventive measures. And finally, this is the task for law enforcement, to show that they are able to prove what's there. If I may, in a couple of minutes, come to or describe what's for FIU there, what's the role there. I think that this is the main reason why I say yes to Hudson Institute and other counterparts to this discussion, because I think that this is something which is notably changing FIU Latvia, and my personal ambition is to become a central part or central body of all AML-CFT regime of Latvia. We want to be more visible. We want to achieve the goals that we are coordinating processes over all activities which are in the AML-CFT environment. I think that the moment of enlightenment for me personally was some months ago, when I started to question myself that maybe all that happened there partially is related to the thing that FIU is not fulfilling its central role. Maybe that's because FIU has been placed somewhere where there are some legislative obstacles to what we have there. Or maybe FIU has not explained properly its role, duties, and just was not visible enough. So right now, what are the resolutions and lessons learned out of these questions? We want to be visible. And as I said in Egmont Group meeting, where we had a very interesting discussion on autonomy and operational independence of FIUs, I said to other heads of FIUs, and these were like 150 or something people there, that we should stand up and speak out. We should inform not only our stakeholders, politicians, but also general public on the need to understand what is the money laundering, that this is not a victimless crime. All of us are suffering from this. And we have to speak out, not only because we have to explain to the general public what will be the consequences if not, one will not understand what is the money laundering and terrorism financing, but this is also important for the information that we receive. It will improve the quality of information. It will also means that we will receive appropriate funding. And my personal role was that when I came there, my first thing, and I may look selfish from that point of view, I demanded and I asked government, and I received the support for this. We finally got appropriate funding for the activities of FIU, which is very important, because under-resourced FIU, the same as law enforcement, cannot perform properly. And of course, if we will not be visible, we will never be able to receive support from our closest allies, law enforcement, prosecutors, judges, those who were reporting entities. And if we will not speak up, then most probably we will get the same situation, or we will be put in the same situation as FIU Latvia was put in February, when everybody blamed FIU for this particular problem, which is, I suppose, not the best way or the most appropriate one. But of course, we take We take some part of this, and we know that we should not ever repeat such situation. So right now, my role is to strengthen FIU's operational independence and to strengthen operational and strategic analytic capabilities. As I said, awareness raising is also in one of my priorities, and strengthening public-private and public-public partnership. It is, as I said already, and I will repeat myself, the main and the most utmost important subject matter for me is the same bank. And of course, we understand that by having a huge non-resident banking sector that we have and still have, although the deposits have decreased and we are fighting very, the government is fighting very, very unfocused way with the market which we have, the financial sector which we have, in order to really to balance that non-resident and resident banking sector. ABLV liquidation process and control of other more riskier banks is one of my main duties. So lessons learned, because I had to elaborate on what are the lessons. I think that I will not go into details about the particular, how to say, the second word, Russian, because you must understand that this is not about just Russian. We can have different money there, and our IEO 11 proves that, and our risk assessment, Latvian risk assessment, proves that this can be money from CIS countries, this can be money from other European or non-European countries where the predicate offense are not rare, something. So I think that lesson learned is that we have to have a dialogue between different local, domestic bodies and also international. Therefore, I'm very happy for you having me here. We should have an openness. We should have an openness in the sharing information and also helping ourselves when we have something, but we are not really sharing with this information with our counterparts. Understanding the financial risks, understanding the financial crime scale, and then actionable insights. So, ladies and gentlemen, I think that it might not, this picture might not be so rosy, but I think that my intention was not to dishearten you. On contrary, I wanted to encourage ourselves, all of us, that we should continue our fight with the money laundering. And as I said already, and I will be repeating myself, it is my true belief that the partnership we build perhaps is most important one. So if we will be building partnerships with each other, then we might probably get better results than we are getting them right now. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Charles Davison, for hosting this event and giving us this platform. And thank you to Ilze Znosina for your clear-eyed and candid remarks on the situation in Latvia. I would like to, inspired by those remarks, I'd like to give a short parade of horrible things that are happening and then argue why that means that I think things are starting now to get better in illicit finance and money laundering in the United States and Europe. Ilze Znosina referred to this briefly and gave a list of countries. Just all countries in the European Union where there have been very large-scale money laundering scandals recently of a kind that people imagine that I think wouldn't happen at this time. And I should note all of those scandals did involve, at least in part, illicit money from Russia and those included ING Bank in the Netherlands, which was subject to the largest fine ever in the European Union of about $900 million, Pilatus Bank in Malta, whose license is now going to be revoked, and was the cause of an European banking agency finding that Malta was in non-compliance with European law. Of course, ABLV and Latvia, as well as money laundering fines on many of the other non-resident banks in Latvia, money laundering fines on most of the major banks in Cyprus, and of course, now the one that's in the headlines is the non-resident operations of the largest bank in Denmark, Danske Bank, those operations of the branch in Estonia, which is a very small branch, but it turned out moved hundreds of billions of dollars over a several-year period, many of which are probably suspicious. And then a report today in the Financial Times that the Estonian branch of Danske, allegedly, according to a memo that the Financial Times saw, conducted 8.5 billion euros in mirror trades to move money out of Russia with the same people that were behind the Deutsche Bank mirror trading scandal. So that's pretty good, because Deutsche Bank was $10 billion over several year periods. The report today is that Danske was $10 billion in 1 year, which is really quite impressive if that's true. And this, of course, led to Scandinavian banking stocks tanking as we speak, because there's fear that the exposure may go beyond that in the Baltics. And there's this uncorroborated report from the Estonian Central Bank that other Scandinavian bank branches may have done the same, although I think we should be skeptical and see what the actual facts are there. The point is, things look really bad. And while all those scandals relate to Russia, there have, of course, been other very high-profile scandals involving Venezuelan money in the United States and the Caribbean, billions of dollars being stolen from the Malaysian government and routed through Singapore and the Caribbean, ultimately into the United States and elsewhere. There's a long list. That's not even all. I would argue that things are starting to get better because we actually care now. This is not new. And one can go back just to the United States and find former CIA official Richard Palmer testifying before Congress in the 90s, warning that this was happening and going to happen. You can find a very large-scale scandal, Bank of New York Mellon, one of the major important financial institutions in New York, that was completely penetrated by Russian money laundering. You can find other similar instances in the past. I should also point out that it was well known that Cyprus and Latvia in particular had financial sectors that catered to money from Russia and the Commonwealth of Independent States. You can find statements from the Latvian and Cypriot governments in 2013. They finally had a handle on the problem and were fixing it. And various European governments, their diplomatic partners, expressed frustration and really wanted it to be fixed, but obviously it wasn't. So on the one hand, we've known about this for a while. On the other hand, it looks like things are getting worse. And that's why I think things are getting better, because we're actually taking some action now. This actually makes sustained headlines. There have been fines. There are starting to be more prosecutions. And there have been some high-profile asset forfeitures in the United States. I don't think we're anywhere where we need to be. But I think the fact that this is beginning to dominate the headlines is an indicator. And the second indicator that things are about to get better is there seem to be two emerging consensuses. One consensus I think is shared in the United States and Europe is that illicit finance, money laundering, corruption, and kleptocracy are no longer seen as either national problems, domestic problems, or development problems, the problem of the theft from third world countries, which is of course unfortunate, unseemly, and distasteful, but not really a priority. And I think that understanding has started to shift, that opaque channels that funnel billions are a national security threat. And actually, the room you sit in here and the Kleptocracy Initiative program at Hudson has done more than anyone to advance that argument over the last few years. And it's starting to take hold in think tank land, as well as, I think, at higher levels of the US government. I would say that this has been very much an important second-tier issue for the last 5 or 10 years, and it needs to be a first-tier issue. I think that's changing. And also, certainly that discussion is happening in London and perhaps throughout the EU. The second emerging consensus that Nicola Avron will talk about in a minute is the inadequacy of the regulatory and supervisory architecture in the European Union around AML, because as he will explain, and as Ilzazona referred to, there is now a banking union on the prudential regulatory side, bank lending, bank capital requirements, but anti-money laundering has been left to individual governments, and that has created in some ways a race to the bottom. I would close in saying that supervisory architecture is important, technical fixes are important, capacity building is important. All the operational things we do to detect illicit finance are important. But with an important caveat, we're never going to stamp it out just as we're not going to eradicate crime. Operational improvements and technical changes are absolutely critical, particularly in the case of the EU, but they're of secondary importance to political will. And I would say that the emerging consensus needs to crystallize around intolerance for people building large industries that cater to this, which then in turn creates a political constituency. That's something that we have abided by over the last 10 or 15 years, and it's been a huge mistake because now it's going to be a lot harder to stamp this out. And at the end of the day, while creative facilitators will find ways around controls, and there will always be money laundering, just as there will always be crime, just as there will always be immutable human nature, we're never going to get rid of it. On the other hand, it's not exactly difficult to figure out that if a small, obscure bank in Estonia is moving hundreds of billions of dollars for a bunch of shell companies, there might be something funny there. So this is as much about political will as it is about technical and operational capacity. I think both are critical, and I think we're beginning to see the shift in political will, but we're not there yet, and I'd say that the next year is going to be crucial in that process. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks to the organizers, and I'm already learning a lot about what's happening here at Hudson and with the kleptocracy initiative. So for me, that's a first benefit of this initiative. I have to say, for the sake of disclosure, that Josh and I are working together at this point on reform of the European Union framework for AML policy and especially AML supervision in the European Union, so that is the context of me being here. And I will, as Josh hinted at, focus my remarks on what's happening in the European Union right now. So first, it's very complicated because the European Union is a lot of different countries. It's very arcane. It's very confusing. Obviously, Switzerland or for that matter, Andorra are in Europe and very much European countries, but they're not in the European Union, so I will not talk about them. And even within the European Union, there is a divide which is now very important, as I will explain, inside the group of 28 countries or 31, including Norway, Liechtenstein, and Iceland, if you take the entire European single market and the European economic area. But there is a divide between the Eurozone, which is a subset of 19 countries, and the others for matters of banking supervision. Plus, on top of that, you have the United Kingdom, which may, probably will, exit the European Union in late March next year, and may or may not, we don't know anything about that, exit the single market. So you have all these different circles overlapping, creating a lot of confusion. So what's happening? The European Union has established a single market. That's actually at the core of the very project of European integration. This single market is cross-sectoral, but it includes banking and financial services. Now, the single market in banking, I'm not going to talk much about other financial services, but it's a same issue in principle. It exists in principle, but not entirely in practice. And there is a complex array of divisions and obstacles to cross-border services, but at the same time, there is a very strong enforceable principle of when you're in the single market, you can serve the entire single market, and that's the concept of a passport in a number of market segments. What that means is that money laundering concerns are particularly acute, or should be particularly acute, in the European Union, because once you're in the single market, you can go everywhere, you can invest your money everywhere, with more limited ability for authorities to ring fence things at their national borders than in the case for jurisdictions that have more autonomy. So no capital controls, nothing of the sort. Well, you will tell me there have been capital controls in Cyprus and Greece, and that's true, but that was an anomaly. Which is certainly not the normal practice. Now, within the single market, we have the banking union, and the banking union is something very recent. Mrs. Notina has alluded to the banking union. What is it? It's the fact that prudential supervision of banks, with emphasis on prudential, is now centralized in the 19 countries of the Eurozone, within the European Central Bank. So the European Central Bank is what in the US you would call the primary federal regulator for all banks. But in addition to that, it's not just that you don't have the US-style fragmentation between OCC, Fed system, and FDIC, but all banks are federally chartered in, to speak US parlance, in the Eurozone. So all the banking licenses are in the hands of the ECB, not of individual member states. That's been the case only since the entry into force of the banking union in November 2014, so less than 4 years ago, big change. Plus, on top of that, the supervision of all the banks that you would call typically regional or large banks in the US, so those above a threshold, which in the Eurozone is of 30 billion euros of assets, plus a number of smaller ones like ABLV was, are directly supervised from Frankfurt by the European Central Bank, so without having a system of regional Federal Reserve banks as you have here. So it's a very centralized system for those banks called significant institutions. Now, that's only the Eurozone, so Denmark is not part of that. Even so, it may join the banking union voluntarily. There is a possibility of that without joining, adopting the euro as a currency. That may happen next year, but it hasn't happened yet. And, of course, the UK is not part of that. So why are we talking about all these money laundering scandals now? I will submit that, of course, it's not because there is more money laundering activity going on in Europe, as Josh has mentioned. These things are not new. And I, for one, don't see any hard indications that, you know, there is more money being laundered in Europe, in the Baltic countries or elsewhere, or Cyprus or Malta or the UK, or you name your favorite country, mine in France, so are France. It's not an increase in illicit activity, but it's in an increase in sensitivity vis-à-vis illicit activity. And my hypothesis for discussion today is that this is because of two things. First, there is an increasing perception of the issues with Russia. And of course, the US action with ABLV was part of that, but it's a feeling that is very much shared inside the European Union with very subtle variations across member states. But the other reason why we're talking so much about money laundering these days in Europe is precisely the fact that we have banking union. And there is a concern among European leaders that the failures of AML supervision and AML enforcement in individual member states creates reputational risk for the European Central Bank. So the European Central Bank has been very vocal in explaining that they're not in charge of AML supervision, which is true, let alone AML enforcement, but they cannot be satisfied with a situation where AML supervision is seen as failing in Europe because they get spillovers, reputational spillovers from there. Now, we can discuss the subtleties of the division of labor between AML supervisors and prudential supervisors in the European Union, but the first order issue is that people understand banking supervision as a holistic concept, and if one key part of that fails, it damages the authority of the ECB. And that creates an awareness of the acuteness of the problems that I think is new and creates welcome pressure for reform in Europe, in addition to the external pressure that came from FinCEN and the US government actions in recent times. So what reform? At this point, we're at an early stage of deliberation in the European Union. That's why Josh and I are working on possible recommendations. The European Commission, less than a month ago, has made proposals to increase the authority of the European Banking Authority, which is this kind of weird coordination agency at the European level, which is not itself a supervisor, but has some coercive powers on national supervisors and the ECB to a limited extent. So they would have more authority over AML under the Commission's proposal. My view of this is that it's neither here nor there. It's not a strong centralized authority that would be able to knock heads together and make things happen. And at the same time, it deprives national authorities of some of their responsibilities and, frankly, accountability when a problem occurs. So I think this is just an initial step in the debate that will unfold over the next few months. My view is that given the experience the European Union has now over, in terms of centralized supervision in other matters, prudential supervision at the ECB, also supervision of some non-bank market segments by the European Securities and Markets Authority, ESMA, for example, with rating agencies and trade repositories. For disclosure, I'm on the board of one of the trade repositories, so I have to declare that interest. I think we have enough experience of that to envisage a much more integrated framework for AML supervision going forward in the European Union. But again, that's a debate that's still to unfold. Much more going into the institutional details to conclude, much more integrated framework in the European Union for AML enforcement. Does that mean AML supervision, which is the job of supervisory authorities, administrative supervision, or the FIU function? Now, of course, in the US, this is the same organization because FinCEN is in charge of both those tasks. That's also the case in some European member states, Malta, Spain, Poland, but not most of the European member states. So there is a debate within the debate, which is if you integrate the framework, is it more on the FIU side or on the supervisory side? My hypothesis will be here that you get more bang for your reform buck, so to say, on the administrative supervisor side, because FIU integration raises very complicated questions of law enforcement coordination in Europe. Supervision, administrative supervision, is by comparison much easier to integrate at the European level. But that's one of the many debates that are going on in Europe right now. And I'll leave it at that, looking forward to our debate now. Thank you.
Well, good morning. First, I'd like to thank Hudson Institute for this great opportunity to discuss the most relevant topics that are so similar, tackled in US, in Europe, in many countries of the world. I'll make some short overview of the history of how this issue has raised up. Banking sector for Latvia is quite a new, but it appeared only after independence. In Soviet time, we didn't have banking sector because all the banks were located in Moscow and belonged to Soviet government. And it was quite a lucrative business, starting from early 90s. And when he discovered that, well, Latvia can be closer than Switzerland. And of course, proximity of big neighbors, Russia and other CIS countries, had also left its traces. Well, I should acknowledge that a number of Latvian governments haven't assessed adequately risks that came together with this growing and flourishing banking sector. Well, until some certain time. When we saw in 2015 that non-resident deposits are creating the major part, 52% of all the deposits located in Latvia. When we saw that, when Latvian government saw that, this situation, non-resident deposits, transactions coming from Russia and other CIS country, dirty money of terrorism, of money laundering, government assessed that it is a risky business. And then I would say the action started with first in 2016 with complete audit of all the major Latvian banks, complete audit done by American companies, audit companies that scrutinized and all the banks and gave their recommendations. Afterwards, government started to implement all these recommendations. What is very important, the banking business, the banking sector, the community understood, according to the previous rules, we will not play. And a year ago, last year in the fall, Banking Association issued their own guidelines combating money laundering, assessing the risks of shell companies and dubious transactions. Well, that was the response of the banking sector itself. And of course, ABLV case probably has increased the speed of all the reforms that were so much necessary for Latvian banking sector. Well, it was the biggest banking sector among Baltic states, with very strong presence of Scandinavian banking, but also strong presence of Latvian national banking sector. Well, government took the very clear position, zero tolerance to AML activities, zero tolerance to terrorism financing. Government not only cooperated very closely on implementation of UN sanctions, but also, on EU sanctions regime, but also cooperated very closely with American partners, with United States in developing legislation of increased and national sanctions, or imposing national sanctions to all kind of terrorism financing cases. Well, Latvia joined also the OECD Convention on Combating Bribery of Foreign Public Officials in International Business Transactions. Well, after ABLV case, very substantial changes of legislation in Latvia have taken place. Parliament approved clear definition on shell companies and all other necessary legislations that improved supervision and reduction of non-resident deposits and a reduction of risks deriving of these non-resident deposits and dubious transactions. I won't repeat what Ilze has said already. I think she described perfectly the situation. But results we could see. If, as I said, in 2015 we had 52% of non-resident deposits, early this year we have something like 33%. Currently we have 24 to 20.5% foreign deposits. That means nearly 80% Latvian deposits, about 10% EU, the deposits coming from EU countries, and 5% coming from Russia and other CIS countries. Now, that's enormous decrease of this risk, decrease of risks as well. But well, with that, I think government actions hasn't stopped. And as Ilze mentioned, 2 weeks ago, government approved a comprehensive plan of action in time scale, end of next year, what government and all the actors are up to combat money laundering and financial crime. Well, ABLV case also indicated that there are problems not only in Latvia. Well, I won't speak about other countries that have been mentioned already today, but it indicated there are systemic gaps in system of supervision on European level. And that's our next step. Latvia, along with other EU members, along with Eurozone members, have to do, and to abolish these gaps, to create efficient and comprehensive system of supervision and efficient system for combating financial crimes. Well, Latvian government has introduced unprecedented ban for banks and payments, any payment institutions related to shell companies. Government has established public-private partnership to enhance investigation of financial crimes, allocated appropriate resources to be efficient in this combating of financial crimes. But of course, the challenges for European countries, for Commission, for ECB, that's what Joshua already mentioned. Well, I wouldn't say that this situation when Latvian banking sector that constitutes about 10% of Latvian GDP would have grave consequences for Latvian economy. First half year, Latvia's GDP has grown by 5.3%. Even with substantially declining foreign resident deposit business. Only a few weeks ago, Standard & Poor's has increased Latvian rating to 1A, and also on a background of decreasing banking sector or banking activities in particular related to foreign deposits, foreign companies. Well, Latvian banking business from the very beginning has been quite advanced technologically. And it is still advanced technologically, and it is implementing new fintech approaches to banking business in combination with IT business, new proposals, new ideas for fintech solutions. And I think, not assessing that current situation as positive. No. Well, it's really the 311 statement of FinCEN was a huge signal to Latvian government, and we have heard it. And we are addressing properly that we should tackle these issues, but certainly we are not alone that should cope with all these risks. At the same time, banking life is still continuing, and American business is entering Latvian banking community. One of our leading banks, Citadel, was bought by American investors 2 years ago. Just a few months ago, Blackstone Group took over Luminor Bank, that's a former DNB, and Nordea took over 60% of the bank assets and entered into Latvian business. Well, I should say that it's not the end of the life, end of Latvian economy and end of Latvian banking business, just opposite. Banking business will develop, but will develop as transparent as banking business is in our days, but under control, under proper supervision, and with zero tolerance to any kind of financial crimes. Thank you.
Well, so we've heard quite extensively from everyone. We don't have a great deal of time left, so what I would like to do is invite our speakers to respond to each other if they have anything they would like to comment on or contradict or whatever. And then we'll just take a few minutes for that, and then we will turn to you for questions. Do we have any, or we can turn right away to questions, depends whether they're just anything you'd like to add or?
I think we had a very unified opinion on what is going on and how the improvement should be.
Yeah, I mean, it's from our US perspective, I mean, one of the things that the kleptocracy initiative is engaging is trying to encourage as much self-flagellation as possible at the U.S. level, because we certainly have reforms that we need to enact. But I think this is a very complete picture of what's going on in Europe right now. And Nicola gave us an overview of what's going on at that level. The newspapers are full of this subject right now also. And when the ambassador mentioned systemic gaps, of course, that's what we're facing everywhere, and what we all need to figure out how to plug those gaps and make this whole system a lot tighter as this has become such a huge political challenge. I mean, Nicolas mentioned there was there's always been plenty of money laundering going on. But these problems were very different before Putin invaded Ukraine, in our view, at least.
Just a small addition to this, I think something that Josh also said very forcefully, I think, looking out the window. The European Union has issues, has some serious issues of rule of law in a number of member states, and this issue, these issues have become increasingly prominent also in a formal way of procedures, as you know, with Hungary, potentially with Poland and Romania, potentially with other member states. So obviously everything we're talking about here, whether in the US or in Europe, is predicated on the notion that there should be zero tolerance for corruption and that the rule of law is non-negotiable. We're seeing challenges about this, both in the US and here, and in the European Union. But I very much tend to see the issue of AML reform framed in that larger issue of what exactly defines our institutional framework.
Do we have any questions? Yes, sir. Back there, there are two microphones circulating. So please just mention your name and affiliation before the question, please.
Hello. My name's John Consants. I have some experience in this. I'm a former prosecutor, and I've been heading anti-money laundering programs for global financial institutions for like 17 years, including Europe, European banks. And I think there's some good points, but I think that the primary obstacle has been that there is no harmonious pan-European enforcement. There is a modicum of supervision through MoneyVal, and I think everybody, maybe they don't know, but Europe has something called the Third European Directive on AML and the Fourth European. Those are minimum standards for all 28 member states, and they're good. They're comprehensive. In some respects, they're even better than the USA Patriot Act. But the enforcement is lax. There's a hodgepodge. Each country has its own sovereign, its own FIU, its own interests, its own resources. And without going into a lot of discourse, I can tell you that if, regardless of whether it's billions of dirty rubles or billions of dirty Indian rupees, they're looking for a substantial tradable currency, like euros and dollars. And it's the weakest link. If you can get into Cyprus, into Latvia, into Denmark, into Estonia, you've got the euro. So I think that there has to be some pan-European enforcement.
Well, I think that's been expressed by the speakers. Do we have any other questions? Just the young man in the third row, please, and then we'll move to the rest of you.
I'm Jeremy Langlois. I'm with the National Endowment for Democracy. Joshua talked a lot about political will as a key factor in making progress on this issue. And I wondered if any of the panelists had comments on whether the upcoming election tomorrow may have an impact on the resources available to tackle this issue. Because, you know, in 20 years, Latvia's had 28 governments. That's, you know, in some analysts' opinion, part of the issue of creating a sustainable AML framework. So if you had comments on that, I'd be interested to hear them.
Well, normally, when a country has to tackle important problems, then there is a certain period, usually about at least 6 months, where political logic is changing and not is being adequate to the normal one that always happens before elections. At the same time, I think what Latvian government had to do, it has done. While this action plan stretching out till end of 2019 has been adopted. Necessary financial means have been allocated, and all these actions will go on. I don't expect that elections may substantially change attitude of our next government. I have no idea, what shape we will have, what kind of coalition. We will have coalition, I can promise you. We'll have coalition, what shape this coalition may have, I don't know. Well, we will see in a few days only. But I think the pressure of any government, of any coalition, from society, and here I would say pressure not only to Latvian government, but also to any democratic government, demanding more transparency, even in banking sector, demanding more responsibility of officials. I think reaction to Panama Papers was quite impressive going across the world. And I think Latvian government, even next Latvian government, will not dig in somewhere and stay apart from all these global processes. They will address these issues adequately, and I'm confident they will continue the work that has been done already and has started, that will go on to bring order in Latvian banking system.
Can I answer? Yes, also? I always lack ability to have those small talks, so therefore I will answer quite honestly to you how I feel and about the elections which we have just tomorrow. I think that there is a potential for not having the same course which we already took. And it is very important for us, those who are professionals within the FIU or the supervisory bodies or any other law enforcement body, to really to be very open and very straightforward with those politicians which will come or which will be in the parliament and afterwards in the government, to disclose to them that this will not be some problem which will just disappear because they appeared there. So it is my personal duty, and of course of those agencies which are standing right behind me or next to me, to inform those politicians about the Moneyval process or the FITF process or any other processes which we will face in very near future and are facing right now. And I'm doing myself it already, trying to convince those politicians, kind of populist ones, some of them having a clear connection with the Russian money, that we will not tolerate their their movements toward not to see what we have seen already for the last few months. So I hope that we will not be lacking resources after these elections, and I hope that the governments and the politicians will continue to work towards the improvement.
May I add one comment to that, Trump?
Yeah, sure.
Just in response to that, Jeremy, I can't comment on Latvian politics. I'm not informed enough. But I can give you a warning of what I think the banks might try to do in Latvia as an example of what they try to do in all these cases. Although I tried to sound an optimistic note, there's an alternative scenario, I think, regardless of what happens in the elections. What they're going to try to do, in particular the leading non-resident banks that are left, such as Norvik and Riotumu and others, is they will try to adopt, or my prediction is that they might try to adopt the window dressing of reform and wait it out till things tide over and the pressure subsides. That has worked in the past. I'm optimistic it will not work this time, but it might. And to give one example of how they could do something like that, they will hire consultants and adopt, you know, issue new programs and bells and whistles. They might also play with the numbers. So the ambassador alluded correctly to that there's been a reduction in non-resident deposits. And I should add, I do think the government has done a lot. I think there's been a correct tone from the top, for example, from finance minister and the prime minister, but especially finance minister Reza Sozola, who's been quite vocal. I believe there's strong leadership at the regulator, at the supervisor, FCMC, and now there's strong assertive leadership at the FIU. But the banks can do things to play with it. So they can start shifting deposits to EU companies or to Latvian companies. It's unclear whether the ABLE's deposits are counted in that 20% figure or not, but let's see what happens. Just as a benchmark, the finance minister and others hoped to reduce it. They announced back in the spring, they hoped to reduce things to 5% by now, and it's currently at 20. And the reason is that it's hard. And you can also route larger flow through smaller accounts and get the deposits down and have the flow tick up. So they're not going to give up, I don't think. And so it's too soon to say, and they will absolutely play around the margins to see if they can stay alive.
Can I elaborate a bit, because it needs answer? I think that it is true and obvious, like opinion on what could happen. On the other hand, I could assure you that we will not let that happen. And I think that it is very important that not only me, but others, my allies, have understood how we've been fooled out from time to time. And you already repeated that and described it. And this might not happen anymore. And this is very good that we have this turning point and we have this moment of darkness right now. And this would not have to repeat again. So I think that I've already seen like almost all banks and discussed with them how risky is their business, despite of those announcements which we have about the deposit decrease or something like this. This is about how FIU sees their business. And FIU has a role for this, really, to not to allow one or another bank just to make those like something, and we will do that. So in that regard, I think that there are different attitudes towards this issue.
Yeah, as a, I think we can all realize that there are a lot of moving pieces there. There are also European pieces. So as Josh mentioned, the European Banking Authority has found, finalized an investigation of breach of union law, as it's called, in Malta, and the current discussion is about follow-up actions to this, which may result in the EBA, as it can under current law, imposing direct decisions on Maltese financial participants if there is a finding of failure of the national authorities. And it's a matter of public record that the European Commission has asked the EBA to conduct similar investigations on Latvian authorities in the follow-up, in the wake of the ABLV case. So that's an ongoing process. It's one step less advanced than in Malta because the EBA has not published its initial findings, but that's also a space to watch.
We had a question in the front row.
Thank you very much. Irene Pasternak from Navigant Consulting. We've been a large part of your independent review, so I can attest that the government of Latvia definitely took very strong steps after 2015, at least that's what we know, to tackle the anti-money laundering issue. What I wanted to touch upon is the ambassador's point of new sort of industries that are coming into Latvia now, such as IT and fintech, and a lot of investments done there. So I wanted to see what is the government's sort of controls around, regulations around, and FAU's role around controlling that environment to make sure that the money laundering that was happening in the banks is not going to move right into the other sectors. Thank you very much.
Well, I think Latvian government is really aware that new technology should be applied and used widely in banking supervision. Because without new technologies, new IT programming, it looks quite impossible. And here I think the key word is well, the same actually applies to supervision on European scale. Also on European scale, some new technologies are needed. Well, what I mentioned about fintech is more about really just normal banking services. Like zip payments that that have been created in Latvia, where in few seconds you can make a transfer across Europe, and cooperation between IT companies and banking sector. That's what I meant. But well, with regard to banking supervision, certainly, well, we are not going to cure our teeth ourselves. So we'll look for dentists.
I think that in relation to FIU roles, role in this regard. It is very important to understand what is the risk there, what is the scale of it, and we understand that, and I've already, last year when I was the leader for the national risk assessment, I've already at that time indicated that if you squeeze something, then it will pop out somewhere else. So, of course, we understand that we should have this attention to the emerging risk of virtual currencies or any like fintech issue or something. Unfortunately, this is not enough just to understand that. And we are working towards that. We really improve our understanding, our ability to fight with particular issues which relates to those new emerging trends. Right now, FIU is in the middle of process of kind of risk assessment for virtual currencies. So this is the first step. Then we, of course, are having the training sessions for our employees and for reporting entities so that we receive that information from them. FIFS AML directive will be some kind of cure for this. Let's see how effective it will be and how where we will move from that point of view. But yes, there are very many issues that are complicated in this regard, and I'm not shying away from this, that that we are still in the just the very, very beginning of the journey in order to understand not that classical, so to say, business with the classical AML issues, but the ones which we have here in this emerging trend.
Another question in back there, please.
Asta Benonis with the Lithuanian American Community Incorporated. I'm delighted to hear that our neighbors, our cousins actually to the north, are doing a good job with reform, and I wish you much, you know, continued success, and hopefully those politicians will come into line that you'll have to handle. My question, though, is probably for Charles and for Joshua, and that is that have you looked at whether any of this laundered money has gone into U.S. hedge funds? And the reason for that that comes to mind, of course, is the Mueller investigation and the links of the Mercer Foundation with Mercer's hedge fund with Cambridge Analytica and other places. And then I just have a quick other question. If there are U.S. politicians who are trying to block the Mueller investigation, and I think we all know the ones who are hyper, they go beyond partisanship. I'm thinking about Mr. Jordan in Ohio and, you know, Mr. Nunes in California. Is it possible to see if they have Cypriot bank accounts?
All right, well, we'll take the, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, you told me that's all yours, and now you want to come
I was going to be able to explain something. No. I refrain.
All right. Well, you jump in after.
I had a way to avoid the question. Well, that was pretty good, I thought.
Okay. All right. Well, the ambassador mentioned systemic gaps, and this whole issue of hedge funds and private equity funds in the United States is a systemic gap because they are not subject to the same AML reporting requirements as banks, et cetera. So that's something we need to fix, period.
Yeah, I agree. I can't comment on Robert Mercer or anyone in particular, but three responses. In terms of whether Americans maintain foreign bank accounts, under U.S. law, you are required to file a foreign bank account report with Treasury. And so it's illegal. That's actually, I believe, one of the things Mueller was either charged or convicted of. And so you have to, and if you don't, it's illegal. Similarly, the U.S. government can obtain under 314A of the Patriot Act information as to whether Americans or foreigners hold domestic bank accounts. So that information is accessible in theory. Your second question about whether money laundered from any particular scheme, so you didn't say which scheme, comes into the U.S., that's a grayer area. That information could be available depending on the facts. So if a suspicious activity report is filed, then that would be available. If it's not, then that wouldn't readily be available to the U.S. government if money going through one of these Eastern European laundromats came here. It wouldn't, if there weren't a SAR, it wouldn't automatically be available. However, there are other ways to get it, such as a law enforcement investigation or a subpoena. There are also authorities on the books to allow the Treasury Department to collect cross-border payment information. It's not being done in a centralized fashion right now, and I think it should, which would then automatically collect all that, assuming the information were contained in the transactional data set. But it can be done in an ad hoc way. So the answer there is maybe. And then your final question about sort of whether hedge funds are laundering money or conduits, part of the problem of private investment funds is that's an additional layer that obscures beneficial ownership. So for example, if money were coming from, let's say, Danske Bank in Estonia at the height of its malevolent activities, coming into a U.S. hedge fund, even if the U.S. government were able to see those flows, it wouldn't necessarily know who the investors underneath the fund are. And there are two gaps there. The first, as Charles alluded to, managers of hedge funds, private equity, and venture capital, although they're regulated by the SEC, are exempt from the requirement to establish and maintain anti-money laundering programs. Congress called for Treasury to impose those obligations in 2001, so it's been 17 years, and that's a gap that needs to close. And then secondarily, it's not an AML issue, but the government doesn't have good insight into who the underlying investors in those funds are or where that money's actually invested. And that's not necessarily an issue for AML or FinCEN, but that's something the SEC could collect under its Securities Exchange Act authority, and I think it should, so we know. But right now, we don't really have good visibility into whose money that is. And that's currently, in terms of SEC-regulated assets of private equity hedge fund venture capital, is $12.5 trillion of U.S. managers. There's also then foreign funds also investing here.
We have a question in the front row.
Hi, Mark McGlinchey. I'm an analyst. I work for U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. I have a two-part question. It's a broad question at first and a more narrow sub-question. Broadly, what do you think about illicit financial flows as they apply to technology transfers and strategic trade controls, military technologies and dual-use technologies with military applications? And more narrowly, in particular, do you think there's adequate scrutiny, regulatory scrutiny, law enforcement scrutiny, as well as intelligence scrutiny on freight forwarders, customs brokers, and trading companies, and trade intermediaries in general that could potentially serve as front or shell companies that, in addition to the illicit trade they engage in, are possibly engaged in illicit trade working on behalf of weapons procurement networks or dual-use technology procurement networks?
That sounds like one question. You said there were. Okay. Well, I'll let my colleagues comment on that. Unfortunately, that's a distressing. Excuse me. Question, where you've sort of embodied a lot of the answer already. I mean, these are the sorts of things we've been very concerned about. And as we know, there are huge systemic gaps in the way that we're able to even know what's going on. Especially given the use of anonymous companies, and there's the famous Victor Bout case, if we go back a few years, but we haven't really done anything to prevent such things from happening, so we don't really know, and we need to make certain reforms clearly in this area. Do we have any further comments on that, though, from the
I can just elaborate a bit, but I already told during my presentation that this is something which is, of course, at stake for us also in Latvian government right now because of those bad ratings which we received. And this was kind of like a waking bell for us because we didn't realize that this is so important. And of course, it also means for me personally, for my colleagues, for law enforcement, to realize that we are in the new era, so to say. We are in an environment where this really matters. And unfortunately, what we see, and right now, I just being here in US, I was dealing with some issues, which clearly indicates that until now, we have not realized how those people who are in the middle of that process of those businesses, how they were able to cover themselves by different businesses, by very innocent businesses, that we would not realize that something like this was going on there. So right now we are trying to build up our ability to really to discover this, to understand that scale. I'm not saying that we are still like at the stage that we could put some kind of like medals there. Yeah. So I think that this is again comes back to this dialogue, the sharing of information as much as possible, and that we are really in the same boat, so to say, that we want to get to the result in a unified way.
This is a sobering and very appropriate note to end on. I'm afraid we have to conclude here, because you're underscoring very much that this is a national security issue above all, and really a NATO security issue. And I'd just like to say, well, first of all, thank you for coming. In terms of policy in our work here at Hudson, we've pretty much put on the table most of the ideas that we think need to be implemented policy-wise in terms of U.S. reform. And one of the things that we're going to be doing going forward is having a lot more contacts with Europe and proposing things in terms of US-European coordination on these matters. So we're delighted to have had this event, had the honor of hosting this, and we hope that we'll be in touch with you all going forward. And thanks again for coming. Thank you.
Thank you.